network design, and the extraordinary leaders we selected and empowered. We also built an intensely close relationship with the U.S. military, particularly CENTCOM and Special Operations Command, SOCOM. We respected our Afghan allies but did not hesitate to act unilaterally when and where needed, which was often. But of greatest importance, George Tenet had forged a trusted relationship with our new president, who listened to the advice of Director Tenet and Kofor Black. President Bush empowered the CIA to strike the enemy at will, while he often conveyed his strategic intent, sometimes directly to me. In turn, often within an hour, I directed our team leaders to respond accordingly, from dealing with allies to eventually helping establish a government in Kabul. CIA's resources and authority, however, needed to mesh with our military, with our warriors, with General Franks. CENTCOM. On 3 October 2001, I flew to Tampa for a meeting at CENTCOM HQS with General Tommy Franks. U.S. Special Forces Colonel Ben Clark accompanied me. He was from CENTCOM, on loan to the CIA. When he learned about our new team and our mission in late September, he volunteered to serve as my military advisor and liaison to CENTCOM. With a self-effacing manner highlighted by a soft-spoken southern drawl, he was exceedingly polite. He also radiated a flinty but careful honesty. He was smart, balanced, and clear in the way he addressed questions, issues, and especially problems. A graduate of the Citadel, he had spent his entire adult life in the U.S. military. He was rail-thin, granite-hard, and indefatigable. I took to him from the first meeting and gratefully accepted his offer of assistance. I included him in every major decision that we made. This was another critical personnel decision. At the time, I did not know how critical. An aide escorted us into General Franks's office, replete with photos, awards, and gifts from many countries. He was tall and raw-boned, with a hard face and wrinkles etched deep by years in the intense hot sun. He greeted me with a booming welcome and a vigorous handshake. The CIA representative to CENTCOM was there, an officer who had several tours abroad. He was competent and helpful. Admiral Bert Calland, the commander of Special Ops in CENTCOM, and Ben Clark's military supervisor was also present. General Jean Renouard, the CENTCOM G3, operations chief, and General Gary Harrell, who was in charge of security for CENTCOM, also joined us. Gary was the Delta Force chief in Somalia during the Black Hawk Down mission. He and I served together in Yemen after the USS Cole was attacked. I shook hands with all except Gary, who gave me a bear hug. A stocky, muscular man of immense physical strength, he almost crushed me. Loud, profane, and irreverent, General Franks demonstrated those endearing qualities in the first minute of our meeting.
"What the hell is going on in Washington? Where is that motherfucker Bin Laden? What in God's name are you doing for your country?"
"General, this is what we're doing," I said as I rolled out my maps on his low coffee table. I showed him our best estimate of the enemy's disposition. Then I explained our team's coordinates and their objectives, determined primarily by our Afghan allies. "General, we can only win this with our Afghan allies. Each of these individual tribal leaders has his own objective. We can coordinate and integrate their efforts. They know the country and the enemy. Our allies know how to fight. They will serve as our ground force, but they need our air support, intelligence, and material assistance. And my CIA teams need your men with us, the sooner the better."
"Tell me about these Afghans," Franks demanded.
"We know them. We've been sending teams to Afghanistan for the last 2 years. You need to know our allies and their capabilities as well as you know our enemies. We will give you everything, including the identities of our collaborators. They are the key to defeating AQ. We are in this together. Without each other, we will fail." I promised to share our intelligence, including that from the Predator UAV, and our new GIS-based map that illustrated friend, foe, and other elements on the ground in Afghanistan. Our Magic Box E-Map was updated constantly. This technology would provide a unique, unprecedented opportunity for intelligence support to the military. This was first and foremost an intelligence collection mission. Without that, all our efforts would collapse. Covert action, military strikes, diplomacy, law enforcement, and policy. Intelligence supported all these instruments of statecraft. We talked for a couple of hours. We plotted and planned. We pledged transparency. The Edge of Attack. After the meeting, Ben Clark said we did well. That's what I wanted to hear. I immediately flew back to CIA HQS, knowing that the air campaign against AQ and the Taliban would commence within days. In Afghanistan, we were marking targets around the clock. We had to get it right. Everything depended on our collection. I briefed Director Tenet, Kofor Black, and U.S. Special Forces Brigadier General Gary Mike Jones on the meeting with Franks. Jones was on loan to CTC as an advisor. His clear, no-bullshit guidance proved increasingly valuable in our campaign. I also outlined the CENTCOM-CIA plans at the daily 1700 hours meeting on the 7th floor of CIA HQS. Director Tenet chaired this briefing, which included not only CTC-SO, but also other CTC branches focused on AQ worldwide. Rich and his team covered that larger picture. There were updates on the enemy's pursuit of weapons of mass destruction. Rolf Moat Larsen took the lead on that topic. Charlie Allen briefed on the intelligence community's all-source collection efforts. Another important participant at these meetings was Air Force General John H. Soup Campbell, the CIA's Associate Director for Military Support. He provided superb advice and support to CTCSO's efforts, particularly regarding our UAV Predator operations. CTC Chief Kofor Black was always there, sitting at the far end of the long conference table. He was quiet, allowing his officers to brief. He was also intensely observant, following the political dynamics as well as the substantive discussions. Other division chiefs, representing the NE, CE, and SAD, would attend, along with the front office of the clandestine service. There was general quiet acquiescence to CTC, since the director had designated this component as the lead. The level of support from other components, however, varied from great to lackluster. Enormous resources and authorities flowed to CTC, and in a competitive organization, there was some natural resentment, just as Kofor had predicted. ADCI Charlie Allen was one source of invariable support and encouragement. You needed a satellite move to obtain different imagery coverage? Charlie would do it. You needed help on tweaking analytical support? Charlie was the guy. And Charlie loved to hear about covert action success, from sabotage to propaganda to lethal action. When I told him about the imminent plans for the bombing campaign to be synced with Afghan ground force assaults on the major cities, he grabbed my arm and in his gravelly voice said, Now we will give it to them. I always sat next to Charlie at the 1700 hours briefing. A couple of days later, after my visit with General Franks, CENTCOM advised us that the planned bombing campaign was still on track. Sitting at my desk in my small office, I discussed our plans with Massey. We understood that we were on the edge of attack. I scratched out an order on a legal pad that I gave to my secretary to type and transmit. It was a 3-page directive to our teams in the field. The title was Military Strategy. The main points included 1. Instruct all tribal allies to ground and identify all their aircraft immediately. 2. Instruct the tribes to cease all significant military movement and hold in place. 3. Inform all tribal allied ground forces to prepare for assaults against their objectives, but again, hold in place. 4. Instruct all assets in country to begin sabotage and other select operations immediately, everywhere possible. This included the targeted killings of enemy leaders, the first coordinated, concentrated expression of U.S. lethal power in the post-9/11 war. 5. Note that CIA and SOF insertions and raids would continue to accelerate in the South in concert with specific airstrikes. 6. Update constantly all no-strike zones. This included their own positions, unilateral agent positions, hospitals, mosques, and other sensitive areas. Throughout Afghanistan, we also dropped